Supreme Command. Nor had he had any indication that the Moffs had rescinded his authorization to begin peace talks.
"True, neither of which means anything at all,"
Gabrysom said, his tone suddenly and uncharacteristically harsh.
"Withdrawn on the scene, officially or otherwise, this is utterly meaningless. True."
He slapped a wingtip across the datapad. "I understand your concerns," Leia said, choosing her words carefully. "But if it's not a trick, this may be our chance to finally end this long war."
"It is most certainly a trick, Counselor,"
Gabrysom ground out.
"That much we can all be sure of. The only question is, what exactly Thrawn hopes to gain from it?"
Leia drew back in her seat, the flash of emotion right then. "You don't want Pellion's offer to be genuine, do you?" she asked. "You want it to be a trick." Gabrysom turned his eyes away from her, snorting a soft, whinnying sigh.
"Oh, look all around us, Leia," he said quietly, turning his head to gaze out the stateroom viewport. "Look at them. Nearly 200 warships, dozens of peoples, all ready to begin a civil war over their own individual concepts of what constitutes justice for Kaar Mas. The New Republic is poised ready to destroy itself. Ooh, and there's nothing I can do to prevent it."
"Han has a copy of the Kaar Mas document," Leia reminded him. "He'll have it here tomorrow. That should diffuse a lot of the tension."
"I'm sure it will," Gabrysom agreed. "But at this point, I'm not willing to rely on even that to stop them. You and I both know that for many of the potential combatants, Kaar Mas has merely become a convenient excuse for restarting old wars with old enemies."
"I realize that," Leia said. "But once that excuse is taken away from them, they'll have to back down."
"Or create a different excuse,"
Gabrysom countered bitterly.
"Oh, the fact is, Leia, that the New Republic is in danger of fragmenting, of being driven apart by our own vast diversity. We need time to counter those forces. Time to talk. Time to plan. Time to try to build all these different peoples into some sort of unity.
Ooh."
He waved a wing toward the viewport.
"But we no longer have that time. This crisis has snatched it away from us. We need to get it back."
"The Kaar Mas document will do that," Leia insisted. "I'm sure it will."
"Perhaps," Gabrysom said. "But as president, I can't afford to put all my hopes on it. I must prepare to muster every common purpose I can find for the New Republic. Every common purpose, every common goal, every common cultural ethos."
He tapped the datapad, gently this time.
"Oh, and if necessary, every common enemy."
"But there's not a real enemy anymore," Leia said, striving to keep her voice calm. "They're far too small and weak to be any kind of threat."
"Perhaps," Gabrysom said. "But as long as they're out there, we have someone to unite against."
He hesitated.
Or even to fight against, if necessary."
"You aren't serious," Leia said, gazing hard at him. "Stirring up action against the Empire at this point would be nothing short of a slaughter."
"I know that," he shook his head. "I don't like this any better than you do, Leia. In fact, I will admit to being ashamed of using the people of the Empire this way. But whether my name and memory are denounced by history is of no importance. My job is to hold the New Republic together and I will do whatever is necessary to achieve that.
Perhaps I have more faith in our people than you do,
Leia said quietly.
Oh, perhaps you do,
Gaversum said with a nod.
I sincerely hope you are right.
Oh.
For a moment they sat together in silence. I presume you won't be releasing news of Pelion's offer,
Leia said at last.
With your permission, though, I'd like to begin putting together a list of delegates for a full peace conference. If and when you decide to proceed with this.
Gaversum hesitated, then nodded.
I admire your confidence, Counselor,
he said.
I only wish I could share it. Yes, please assemble your list.
Thank you.
She got up from her chair and retrieved her datapad.
I'll have the list ready for you by tomorrow.
She turned to the stateroom door.
Oh, there is, of course, one other option open to you,
Gaversum called from behind her.
You are merely on leave of absence from the presidency. Assuming the Senate confirmed the decision, you could resume that office right now.
I know, Leia said. But this isn't the time for that. Yours is the voice that has been speaking for Coruscant since the Ka'amas document first came to light. It wouldn't be good for that voice to suddenly change.
Perhaps, Gaversum said. But there are many in the New Republic who believe that Calibops are skilled at words and nothing more. Perhaps the time for words has ended, and the time for action has arrived. Oh!
Leia stretched out briefly to the Force. The time for action may indeed have come, she agreed. But that doesn't mean the time for words is ended. Both will always be needed.
Gaversum whinnied softly.
Oh! Then I will continue with the words, he said. And will entrust to you the actions. May the Force be with us both.
May the Force be with us all,
Leia said quietly.
Good night, President Gaversum.
Chapter 33
She waited until an hour after the background sounds of the household had quieted down. Then, getting up from her bed, Shada left her room in the vast underground complex that was Georges Cardass's home and slipped down the darkened hallway. The library door was closed, and the Ang-Ti hand-waving trick Cardass had used to get inside obviously wasn't going to work for her. However, before saying goodnight, he had showed her and Card the more conventional method of opening their room doors, and she was banking on the library being set up the same way. Searching around the stones lining the doorway with her fingers, she found the slightly cooler one and pressed her palm against it. For perhaps 20 seconds, nothing happened. Shada maintained her pressure on the stone, alert for signs of activity in the area, and wondering again at this ridiculous procedure. Based on the life story he told them, she couldn't see the Georges Cardass who had first arrived here on Exicron being an overly patient man. Certainly not the type to install doors in his home that took half a minute to open. She could only assume his thinking at the time had been that intruders bent on theft or violence would be similarly impatient. Now, of course, with his Ang-Ti tricks, none of it mattered. At least not to him. Beneath her hand, the trigger stone gave a gentle bump. Shada held on, and a few seconds later, the door finally slid ponderously open. She'd expected the library to be as dark as the rest of the house, with only a handful of muted glow panels to show the way around. To her uneasy surprise, the room was lit much more brightly than that. Not as bright as it had been when Cardass showed it to them earlier, but brighter than an uninhabited room ought to be. She slipped inside, ducking to the left out of the doorway. And as she did so, she caught a glimpse of a moving shadow in the central circle near the computer desk. Cardass? she bit back a curse. Card had already scheduled an early morning departure for the Wild Card's rendezvous with the Yang-Ti ship. This was her one and only chance to get the data card she needed to find. And then, drifting up from the computer desk, she heard a muffled but very familiar voice. Distinctive, somewhat prissy, and quite mechanical. Silently, she detached herself from the wall and made her way down one of the narrow aisles between the data cases and headed to the center, to find that her ears had indeed not been playing tricks on her.
"Hello, Mistress Shada,"
3PO said brightly, straightening up from his stooping lean over the computer desk.
"I thought you and the others had retired for the night."
"I thought you had done so too," Shada said, glancing at the nearest data case as she stepped over to him.
Each shelf completely packed with stacks of data cards, each stack of data cards standing 8 to 10 deep. An incredible collection of knowledge.
Or whatever it is droids do at night.
"Oh, I usually close down for a time. But during my talk earlier with Master Cardass, he suggested I might wish to have a chat with his main computer. Not that the computer aboard the Wild Card is in decent company, of course. But I must admit, I sometimes miss R2 and others of my own kind."
"I understand,"
Shada assured him, a lump forming in her throat.
"It can be very lonely to be somewhere where you're out of place."
"Really?"
3PO said interestedly.
"I suppose I've always assumed human beings were adaptable to most every place and circumstance."
"Being adaptable to something doesn't necessarily mean you like it,"
Shada pointed out.
"In many ways, I'm as much out of place aboard the Wild Card as you are."
The droid tilted his head.
"I'm so sorry, Mistress Shada,"
he said, sounding pained.
"I had no idea you felt that way. Is there anything I can do to help?"
"Maybe help me return to where I belong."
Shada gestured down at the computer desk.
"Have you gotten to know the computer well enough to be able to do a search of Cardass's library?"
"Certainly,"
3PO said, his voice suddenly wary.
"But this is Master Cardass's equipment. I'm not sure I should..."
"It'll be all right," Shada soothed him. "I'm not going to steal anything. All I want is one small piece of information."
"I suppose that would be all right,"
3PO said, still sounding uncertain.
"We are his guests, after all, and guests often have the tacit run of the household.
He stopped as Shada held up a hand.
"Can you do the search?"
she asked again.
"Yes, Mistress Shada,"
he replied in a somewhat subdued voice.
"What is it you wish to search for?"
Shada took a deep breath.
"Emboline,"
a quiet voice came from behind her.
"The planet Emboline."
"Oh, my!"
3PO gasped. Shada spun around, dropping into a slight crouch, her hand diving beneath her tunic to the grip of her blaster.
"Forgive me,"
Cardass said, coming into view around the inner circle of data cases.
"I didn't mean to startle you that way."
"I certainly hope not,"
Shada said, her grip still on her blaster, muscles and reflexes preparing for combat. If Cardass took exception to her being here...
"I didn't hear you come in."
"I didn't mean for you to hear me,"
he said, smiling.
"You're not planning to use that blaster, are you?"
So much for Mistral subtlety.
"No, of course not,"
she said, withdrawing her hand empty.
"I was just..."
She broke off, frowning, as the words he had spoken a moment earlier suddenly penetrated her conscious mind.
"What did you say when you came in?"
"I told 3PO you wanted to do a search for the planet Emboline,"
Cardass said, eyeing her steadily.
"That is what you were going to look up, wasn't it, my young Mistral Shadow Guard?"
Her first impulse was to deny it, but looking into that even gaze, she knew it would be a waste of effort.
"How long have you known?"
she asked instead.
"Oh, not long at all,"
he said, waving a hand in an oddly self-deprecating gesture.
"I suspected, of course, but I didn't actually know until you defeated those swore swoopers outside Bombasa's place."
Shada grimaced. So Card was right, she said. He thought giving Bombasa his name would eventually get it back to you.
Kardash shook his head.
You misunderstand. Bombasa doesn't work for me, nor I for him. In fact, aside from Entu Ni and the other few in my household, no one actually works for me at all.
Right. You're retired, Shada growled. I forgot.
Or else you don't truly believe,
Kardash countered.
Tell me, what is it you want for Embeline?
What everyone else wants, she shot back. At least what they want for big, important worlds like Ka'amas. I want justice for my people.
Kardash shook his head.
Your people don't want justice, Shayla,
he said, an infinite sadness in his voice.
They never did.
What are you talking about?
Shada demanded, feeling her face warming.
How dare you judge us? How dare you judge anyone? Sitting out here all high and mighty, never deigning to get your own hands dirty while everyone else fights and bleeds and dies?
She broke off, her rising fury at his attitude battling against her deeply ingrained fear of losing control.
You don't know what it's like on Imberline, she bit out. You've never seen the suffering and squalor. You have no business saying we've given up.
Kardas's eyebrows lifted.
I never said you'd given up,
he corrected her gently.
What I said was that you didn't want justice.
Then what do we want?
Shada snarled.
Charity? Pity?
No.
Kardash shook his head.
Vengeance.
Shada felt her eyes narrow.
What are you talking about?
Do you know why Imberline died, Shada?
Kardash asked.
Not how it died. Not the firestorming and massive air and space attack that finally crushed it. But why?
She stared at him, a dark uneasiness beginning to swirl into the flame of her anger and frustration. There was something behind his eyes that she didn't like the look of at all.
Someone feared our growing power and prestige and decided to make an example of us, she said carefully. Something that person was Palpatine himself, which is why we've never worked for his empire.
The eyebrows lifted again.
Never?
Shada had to look away from that gaze.
We had millions of refugees to feed and clothe,
she said, her voice sounding hollowly defensive in her ears.
Yes, sometimes we worked even for the Empire.
For a moment, the room was filled with an awkward silence.
Principles are so often like that, aren't they?
Kardash said at last.
So very slippery. So hard to hold on to.
Shada looked back at him again, trying to come up with a properly scathing retort. But nothing came to mind. In Emberline's case, in the Mistral's case, his quiet cynicism was all too true.
At any rate, that particular principle was of no real value,
Kardash continued.
As it happens, Palpatine had nothing to do with Emberline's destruction.
He stepped past her and around to the data case behind 3PO.
I have the true history of your world right here,
he said, waving at the top row of data cards.
I pulled all the information together once I knew you'd be coming here with Card. Would you like to see it?
Automatically, Shada stepped toward him, hesitated.
What do you mean by true?
She asked.
What does anyone mean by true? We both know history is written by the winners.
History is also written by the bystanders,
Kardash said, his hand still up beside the data cards.
By the Ka'amasi and the Alderaanians and the Jedi. People who had no part or stake in what happened. Would you accuse all of them of lying?
Shada swallowed, fear and a horrible sense of inevitability twisting itself around her throat.
And what do all these disinterested parties say?
She asked. Slowly, Kardash lowered his hand.
They say that 3 years before its destruction,
he said gently,
the rulers of Imbolin set off on a rampage of conquest. And for the first 2.5 of those years, they destroyed and conquered and plundered every one of the dozen other worlds within their reach.
No,
Shada heard herself whisper.
No, that can't be true. We wouldn't. We couldn't have done something like that.
The average citizens weren't told the true story, of course,
Cardass said.
Though I imagine most could have read between the lines if they truly wanted to know what their leaders were doing. But they had triumph and spoils, pride and glory. Why bother with mere truth?
Again, Shada had to look away from those eyes.
It wasn't my fault,
she wanted to protest.
I wasn't there. I didn't do it.
But the words were hollow, and she knew it. No, she hadn't been one of those who had toasted Emberlyn's conquests and looked eagerly ahead for more. But in dedicating her life to the Mistral, she had in her own way helped to perpetuate the lie. All because she had wanted to make a difference.
You shouldn't take any of this personally, Shada,
Cardass offered softly into her thoughts.
You didn't know. And the desire to make a difference is something held deeply within all of us.
Shada looked sharply at him.
Stay out of my mind, she snapped. My thoughts are none of your business.
He bowed his head briefly.
I'm sorry,
he said.
I didn't mean to intrude. But when someone is shouting, it's usually difficult not to overhear.
Well, try harder.
Shada took a deep breath.
So what happened? How were we finally stopped?
Your victims and potential victims were too weak to fight back on their own,
Cardass said.
So they pooled their resources and hired a mercenary army. The army was, perhaps, overly thorough.
Overly thorough. Again, Shada searched for a blistering retort. Again, there was nothing she could say.
And all in the sector rejoiced,
she murmured.
Yes,
Cardass said quietly.
But for the stopping of a dangerous war machine, not for the suffering of the innocent.
No. The innocent are never a very high priority, are they?
Shada said, hearing the bitterness in her voice.
Does your true history tell who the army was who destroyed us? Or who their sponsors were?
His face seemed to settle subtly.
Why do you want to know?
Shada shrugged, an uncomfortable hunching of suddenly tired shoulders.
My people have never known who did it.
And if I give you that information, what will you do with it?
Cardass asked.
Turn the vengeance of the Mistral against them after all these years? Create more suffering among still more innocents?
The words were a sudden stab in her heart.
I don't know what they'll do with it,
Shada said, a sudden misting in her eyes blurring her sight.
All I know is that it's the only thing I can take back that might let...
She broke off, swiping viciously at her eyes.
You don't want to go back to them, Shada,
Cardass said.
They're living a lie, whether they know it or not. That's not for you.
I have to,
Shada said miserably.
Don't you understand? I have to work for something larger than myself. I've always needed that. I have to have something to hold on to and serve that I can believe in.
What about the New Republic?
Cardass asked.
Or Card himself?
The New Republic doesn't want me,
she bit out.
And Card...
She shook her head, an acid burning in her throat.
Card's a smuggler, Cardass. Just like you were. What kind of purpose is that to believe in?
Oh, I don't know,
Cardass said thoughtfully.
Card has altered the organization considerably since my days with it.
It's still the fringe, Shada said. It's still illegal and underhanded. I want something honorable. Something noble. Is that so much to ask for?
No. Of course not,
Cardass said.
Still, Card's much more an information broker now than he is a smuggler. Isn't that at least a little better?
No, Shada said. In fact, it's worse. Information brokering is nothing more than selling people's private property to those who don't deserve to have it.
Interesting point of view,
Cardass murmured, his gaze shifting to Shada's right.
Have you ever considered it that way?
I haven't up until now, Card's voice said. Shada spun around, shaking the last lingering tears from her eyes. Off to her right, dressed in a robe and ship slippers, Card was standing just outside the inner circle, regarding her with an odd expression on his face. Perhaps I need to reassess my thinking, he added.
What are you doing here?
Shada demanded.
Cardass called me, Card said.
He looked at Cardass, his forehead wrinkling.
At least, I think he called me.
Oh yes, definitely,
Cardass assured him.
I thought you should be in on this part of the conversation.
He bowed his head to Shada.
Forgive me again, Shada, if I startled you.
Shada fought back a grimace.
He's just full of surprises, isn't he?
He commented.
He's always been that way,
Card agreed, stepping over to her side.
All right, Cardass. Your two puppets are assembled and awaiting your commands. What do you want from us?
Cardass's eyes widened in a look of innocence.
Me?
He protested.
I want nothing from you, my friends. On the contrary, I wish to present you with a gift.
Shada glanced at Card, found him throwing her the same suspicious look.
Really? Card said dryly. And what kind of gift might that be?
Cardass smiled.
You never were one to appreciate surprises, were you, Card?
He said.
Not too bad at dealing them out, mind you, but extremely poor at accepting them. But I think you'll like this one.
He turned to the data case behind him and selected two data cards from the top shelf.
This is the gift I offer,
he said, turning back to face them, holding one of the data cards in each hand.
This,
he held up his right hand,
is the history of Emberlyn I was just speaking to Shada about. Something she very much wants, or at least has thought in the past that she wanted. This,
he held up his left hand,
is a data card I made up especially for you. One which I personally think will be far more beneficial for everyone in the long run.
What's on it?
Card asked.
Useful information.
Cardass laid them down side by side on the computer desk.
You may have one of them. Please, choose.
Beside her, Shada felt Card take a deep breath.
It's your choice, Shada, he said quietly. Take whichever one you wish.
Shada stared down at the two data cards, waiting for the inevitable emotional turmoil to twist through her. Her only hope of rejoining the Mistral, perhaps her only hope of even staying alive through the death mark they'd put on her, lay there to her left. To her right was an unknown quantity, put together by an old man who might easily be half insane, or the supposed benefit of another man whose whole purpose in life was the antithesis of what she herself had always yearned for. But to her weary surprise, the turmoil never came. Had Cardass's earlier revelations merely burned all of it out of her, she wondered vaguely, leaving no strength left to drive such emotions as anger or uncertainty? But no, there was no turmoil because there was no real decision to be made. Cardass was right. She could no longer work with the Mistral, who served and killed and died so that Emberlyn could someday rise again. Not now that she knew what Emberlyn had once been. and certainly not now that she could see what the Eleven might do with the knowledge on that data card. The justice she had once thought she was seeking had already been carried out. All that data card could create was vengeance. Reaching across the desk, distantly aware that she was now finally crossing the final bridge from her past, she picked up the data card on the right.
"I'm pleased with you, Shader Thukal, child of the Mistral,"
Cardass said with a warmth she had never heard in his voice before.
"I promise you won't be disappointed."
Shada looked at Card, steeling herself for his reaction to Cardass's revelation, but he merely smiled.
"It's all right," he said. "I've known who you are for a long time."
She looked back at Cardass.
"Who I was," she corrected Card quietly. "What I am now, I don't know."
"You'll find your way,"
Cardass assured her. Abruptly, he straightened and rubbed his hands together.
"But now, it's time to go."
Shada blinked.
"Already? I thought we had until morning."
"Why, it is morning out there,"
Cardass said, coming around the computer desk and taking Card and Shada each by an arm.
"Close enough, at least. Come, come! There's a great deal yet for you to do. You too, 3PO. Come along."
"What about this?"
Shada asked, waving the data card as Cardass hustled them up the aisle toward the exit.
"You can read it on the way to the rendezvous point,"
Cardass told her.
"Just the two of you, together. No one else. After that, I think you'll know what to do."
They reached the door, and Cardass waved it open.
"What about you?"
Card asked, as the old man steered them back down the hallway, now properly lit again, toward their rooms.
"My door's always open to you,"
Cardass said.
"Either of you, of course. Come back any time you want to visit. But for now, you must hurry."
An hour later, the wild card lifted from Exocron and headed out into space. An hour after that, after assuring himself they were properly on their way to their rendezvous with the waiting Aang-T ship, Card took Shada back to his office. And sitting together in front of his desk display, they read the data card. Shada was the first to break the silence.
"He was right, wasn't he?"
she murmured.
"This is incredible. If it's true, that is."
"Oh, it's true,"
Card said, gazing at the display, his mind spinning furiously. Shada had vastly understated the case. Incredible didn't even begin to cover it. If he was nothing else in his entire life, Cardass was always reliable.
"I can believe that."
Shada shook her head.
"I take it we're going to have the Aang-T take us straight back to Coruscant with this?"
Card hesitated. Coruscant was, of course, the obvious choice, but there was a complete range of possibilities here. Some very interesting possibilities indeed.
"Card?"
Shada cut into his thoughts, her tone suddenly suspicious.
"We are taking this back to Coruscant, aren't we?"
He smiled at her.
"Actually, no," he said. "I think we can do better than that."
He looked back at the display, feeling his smile turn grim.
"Much, much better."
Standing astride the command walkway of the Imperial Star Destroyer Tyrannic, Captain Nalgal stared out into the blackness beyond the viewports. There was still nothing to see out there, of course, unless one of their probe ships happened to dip into the edge of the cloaking shield, or he wanted to contemplate the dirty edge of the comet at their side. But it was tradition for a ship's captain to gaze at the universe from his bridge, and Nalgal was feeling rather traditional today. 4 days. 4 more days, and the long, stultifying idleness would finally be over. Just 4 days. Assuming the strike team was still on schedule. 4 days. From the far end of the command walkway, He could hear Intelligence Chief Oisin's slightly clunky footsteps approaching. Nearly 10 minutes late, he noted with disapproval as he glanced at his chrono.
Captain?
Oisin said, puffing slightly as he came up beside Nalgal.
I have the latest probe ship report for you.
Nalgal turned to him, noting the slight redness of Oisin's face.
You're late, he said.
There was more analysis required than usual,
Oisin said stiffly, holding out a data pad.
It seems the ships over Bothawi nearly started the war a few days early.
Nalgal felt his eyes narrow as he took the data pad.
What are you talking about?
He demanded, keying for the proper file.
One of the Ishori warships decided to push at the Diamala,
Oisin said.
He came within half a blink of pushing them into open combat.
Nalgal swore under his breath, glancing over the report. Those hot-headed alien fools started their hostilities before the strike team was ready.
What stopped them?
He asked.
Never mind. There it is,
he added, skimming the section.
Interesting. Did anyone get an ID on that freighter?
None of the probe ships were close enough for a positive ID,
Oisin said.
But the follow-up comm traffic through the fleet said it was High Counselor Organa Solo. That's unconfirmed, though.
But highly likely,
Nalgal grunted.
Here to help Gavrisim calm everyone down, no doubt.
No doubt.
Oisin lifted his eyebrows.
The rumors also say she brought a Karmasi Trustant with her.
Do they now?
Nalgal said, feeling a slow smile starting to tug at the corners of his mouth.
Do they really?
We shall know for sure in a day or two,
Oisin pointed out.
If Gavrisim has a real Karmasi there with his peace envoy, he's sure to parade him out in front of everybody as soon as he can.
Indeed,
Nalgal murmured.
And if we can keep him here talking peace for 4 more days, we'll be able to say there was a Karmasi present at the destruction of Bothawi. Present, and by implication, fully approving.
He shook his head wonderingly.
Amazing. I wonder how Thrawn pulled that one off.
It's amazing, all right,
Oisin agreed, not sounding nearly so enthusiastic.
I just hope he hasn't miscalculated somewhere along the line. 191 warships would be a little much for 3 Star Destroyers to take on all by ourselves.
You worry too much,
Nalgal chided, handing back the data pad.
I've seen Thrawn at work, and he never miscalculates anything. The strike team will do their job, and then those warships of yours will commence tearing each other apart. All we'll have to do is eliminate the survivors and demolish whatever's left of the planet.
Or so goes the theory, anyway,
Oisin said sourly.
May I recommend, Captain, that you at least put the Tyrannic and the others on standby alert for the remainder of our time out here? That way we'll be able to move quickly if things break sooner than expected.
It'll also mean 4 extra days worth of worn-off combat edges,
Nalgal reminded him.
I hardly think that will be useful.
But if things break too soon...
They won't!
Nalgal cut him off brusquely.
If Thrawn says 4 days, it'll be 4 days, period.
Oisin took a deep breath.
Yes, sir,
he muttered. Nalgal eyed the other, a mixture of contempt and pity flickering through him. Oisin, after all, had never met Thrawn, had never heard the confidence and authority in the Grand Admiral's voice. How could he possibly understand?
All right, we'll compromise,
he said.
I'll order preliminary battle prep to begin this afternoon. And one day before the projected flashpoint, we'll go to standby alert. Will that make you feel better?
Yes, sir.
Oisin's mouth twitched.
Thank you, sir.
And your preliminary battle prep will begin right now.
Nalgal continued, gesturing at the data pad.
I want you to make up a priority threat list for every one of those ships out there. Put in everything you have about their capabilities, defenses, and weaknesses, and include details of captain and crew species where possible.
He smiled tightly.
When we finally come from under this cursed cloaking shield, I want to be able to slice straight through whatever's left without losing so much as a single turbo laser or prey bird. Understood?
Understood, Captain,
Oisin said.
I'll have it ready for you by tomorrow.
Very good.
Norgal nodded.
Dismissed.
Turning smartly, Oisin headed aft at a quick walk along the command walkway. Norgal watched him for a moment, then turned back to the empty view through the viewport. 4 days. 4 days, and they would finally have their chance to slaughter rebel scum. He smiled into the darkness. Yes, he was indeed feeling very traditional today.
Chapter 34.
With a start, Luke woke up. For a moment, he stayed where he was, fighting against the usual floundering of trance-induced disorientation as he made a quick assessment of his situation. He was seated in a slightly uncomfortable seat, he recognized, with an unfamiliar control board in front of him, and a curved canopy in front of that. From somewhere behind him, a handful of soft nightlights glowed. In front of him, outside the canopy, it was completely dark outside. He blinked, coming suddenly fully awake. Completely dark outside? He fumbled with his restraints, throwing a glance at his chrono as he did so, and paused, giving the chrono a second look. He'd been in a healing trance for nearly 5 hours. 5 hours? Mara, I said to wake me in 2 hours, he called back toward the rear of the ship, getting free of the restraints and stumbling to his feet. What happened? You fall asleep back there yourself? But there was no answer. Only the sudden frantic twittering from R2. And there was also no Mara. Oh no, Luke breathed, stretching his mind out to flick through every corner of the ship. Mara was nowhere to be found. R2, where is she? He snapped, dropping to one knee and lifting up the datapad translator still hooked up to the droid. The words scrolled across it. What do you mean she left? He demanded. When? Why? R2 moaned mournfully. Luke gazed at the words flowing across the datapad, his heart sinking inside him. Mara had left 5 hours ago, right after he'd settled into his trance. R2 didn't know where she'd gone or why. But both of those Luke could already guess. It's all right, he sighed, patting the droid reassuringly as he got back to his feet. I know there's no way you could have stopped her. He crossed to the hatch, the taste of terrible fear mixing with the bitter knowledge that whatever she had gone off to do, it was far too late now for him to stop her either. Keep an eye on the ship, he told the little droid, popping open the hatch. I'll be back as soon as I can. He stepped outside, not bothering with the ladder, but simply dropping to the ground. Directly overhead, between the surrounding cliff peaks, patches of stars shone brightly down through the gaps between drifting clouds. Everywhere else, all was darkness. Mara! He called out, shouting her name hopelessly into the silent night with his mind. It was as if a cloaked and hooded figure had stirred. Somewhere not far away, a dark hiding presence seemed to shift. A crack opened between cloak and hood. Up here, her thought came back. Luke peered up at the blackness of the cliff directly ahead, caught between the sudden relief that she was still alive and the sobering sense that something terrible was still about to happen. The glimpse faded as Mara seemed to pull her mental cloak back around her. Where are you? Luke sent the thought outward, fighting back the temptation to break through this cocoon she had suddenly and inexplicably retreated into. He sensed her hesitation, and her almost resigned sigh. Then, flashing into his mind like glimpses seen in a flickering light, he caught a series of images of the rock face in front of him, marking the route she'd taken up. Sending an acknowledgement and encouragement back toward her, he crossed to the cliff and started up. The climb wasn't nearly as tricky as he had thought it would be, and with Jedi strengthened muscles behind it, the trip took less than 10 minutes. He found Mara sitting on a rough ledge near the peak, braced sideways against the particular shelter of a rugged upthrust of rock.
"Hello,"
she called quietly, as he came up onto the final ridge.
"How are you feeling?"
"Completely healed," he said, frowning at her as he maneuvered his way along the ridge and sat down beside her. Her voice had been quiet and controlled, but beneath the dark cloak of her mental barrier, he could sense the edge of an incredible sadness. "What's going on?" In the faint sheen of starlight, he saw her right hand lift and point ahead.
"The Hand of Thrawn's over there,"
she said.
"You can see the 4 back towers against the clouds when the light's right."
Luke gazed that direction, running through his sensory enhancement techniques. The towers and back wall of the fortress were indeed visible, along with a hint of something between the leftmost towers that was probably the flat roof of the hangar they'd fought their way out of a few hours ago.
"What have they been doing?"
he asked.
"Nothing much,"
Mara said.
"That ship that was out? Remember the gap we saw in the parking array? It got in about 3 hours ago."
Luke grimaced. A functional ship, sitting right there in front of the ones he'd sabotaged? Ready to head off to Bastion at a moment's notice. "It hasn't left again?" He sensed the shake of her head.
"Not that I could tell. Anyway, Park said they'd be debriefing the pilot before he made a final decision."
"I see," Luke murmured. A debriefing that, under the circumstances, Park and Fell would undoubtedly be hurrying along as quickly as they could. A fast decision, a fast lift back into the sky, and the Empire would have the Hand of Thrawn and all its secrets.
And yet, here he and Mara sat, waiting. But for what? "It's funny, you know,"
Mara murmured from beside him.
"Ironic, really. Here we are. The woman who spent 10 years trying to build a new life for herself, and the man who spent those same 10 years rushing madly around, trying to save the galaxy from every new threat that reared its ugly face."
"That's us, all right," Luke said, eyeing her uneasily. The twisting darkness in her was growing stronger. "Not sure I see the irony, though."
"The irony is that with the New Republic ready to tear itself apart, you rushed off to save me,"
Mara said,
"ignoring your self-delegated responsibilities in order to save that one woman and her one life."
He felt her take a deep breath.
"And that one woman,"
she added, almost too quietly to hear,
"is now the one who has to sacrifice that new life she wanted to save the New Republic."
Abruptly, a distant flash of pale green light illuminated her face. A face carved from stone. A face gazing with terrible pain and loneliness into the night.
"Looks like you got here just in time,"
she said, as a faint thunder crack echoed in the distance. There was a second green flash. With an effort, Luke tore his eyes from her tortured face and turned to look. The towers were firing. Even as he focused on them, another pair of green turbolaser flashes lanced out from the top of one of them across the sky, followed by a pair from one of the other towers, firing across the landscape in the opposite direction from where he and Mara sat.
"Ranging shots, probably,"
Mara said, her voice the deceptive calm of an overly taut spring.
"Trying to gauge the distance. It won't be long now."
Luke looked back at her. The pain within her was growing, pressing outward against her mental barrier like floodwaters against a dam.
"Mara, what's going on?"
"It was all your idea, you know,"
she continued, as if he hadn't spoken.
You're the one who wanted so much for me to become a Jedi.
She sniffed loudly, the sound of someone fighting back tears.
Remember?
And then, from the fortress, a flurry of turbo laser shots abruptly burst out. The green fire accompanied this time by a counterpoint of blue from Chiss-style weaponry. All four towers were firing now, firing madly and persistently, all in the same direction. Luke craned his neck, trying to see, wondering what in the world they could be shooting at. Had Card sent in a backup force after all? Had the New Republic found them? Or the Empire? Or one of those 100 terrible dangers Park had talked about? He looked back at Mara, and in that single awful heartbeat, he knew. Mara, he breathed. No. Oh, no.
It had to be done,
she said, her voice trembling. In the backwash of light from the enemy fire, Luke could see she was no longer even trying to hold back the tears.
It was the only way to keep them from taking all of this and handing it to Bastion. The only way.
Luke looked back at the fortress, the knife of Mara's grief digging in beneath his own heart, a sudden frenzy of thought and urgency swirling through his mind. If he'd woken up earlier, if he'd forced his way through her mental barriers back in the fortress and learned her private plan, if he even now stretched out with the full power of the Force.
Don't,
Mara murmured, her voice infinitely tired.
Please, don't. It's my sacrifice. Don't you see? The final sacrifice every Jedi has to go through.
Her fumbling hand reached out to touch his. It felt very cold.
There's nothing you can do. Nothing at all.
Luke inhaled raggedly, the cool night air digging like the ice of Hoth into his lungs. His hands and mind and heart aching with the overwhelming desire to do something. To do anything. But she was right. He could hate it. He could bitterly oppose it. But down deep, he knew she was right. The universe wasn't his responsibility. Decisions made by other people, their actions, their consequences, even their sacrifices, they weren't his responsibility either. Mara had made her choice and had accepted the consequences for it. And he had neither the duty nor the right to try to take it away from her. Which left only one thing he could do. Moving closer to her on the ledge, he put his arm around her. For a moment she resisted. Old fears and habits and loneliness mixing together with her roiling pain to stiffen her muscles away from him. But only for a moment. Then, as if that part two of her life had now been lost, she melted against his side. Her so carefully constructed barriers bursting aside as she finally poured out the grief and loss she had held so deeply and privately inside her. Luke wrapped his arm tighter around her, murmuring meaningless words as he fought with her through the storm of pain and misery, absorbing what he could of it, and offering what comfort and warmth he could in return. In the distance, the firing from the towers increased, and then, above the edge of the cliff, he saw it. Cutting low over a distant hill, its hull burnished by the surrealistic effect of full shields operating in atmosphere. It twisted and writhed like a living thing as it evaded or dodged or simply shrugged off the withering firestorm savaging the air around it, firing back steadily but uselessly in return at the impenetrable black stone rising before it. Drawn like a Minok to a power cable, by the beckon call Mara had spliced into one of the alien ship's comm systems. It was driving its single-minded way toward the open hangar entrance, the one single weak point in the entire fortress. Mara's personal ship. The one thing in the universe she truly owned. the jade's fire. The tears had stopped now, Mara's shoulders tensing beneath Luke's arm as she leaned tautly forward to watch. The fire was almost the hand of Thrawn now, and Luke could see that beneath the burnishing effect, the hull had been torn open in a dozen different places, some with the yellow swirling of raging flames blazing behind them. The towers intensified their attack. It was too late. The fire dipped one final time, vanishing from their view. And with a brilliant yellow-orange fireball that blasted outward toward the far mountains, lighting up the landscape like daylight on Coruscant, it reached its goal. The sound of the explosion a second later seemed curiously muffled, as if the containing wall of Hejarna stone was as unaffected by the sound as it presumably had been by the explosion itself. A few seconds later, another, even softer blast washed over them, echoed back from the mountains. The towers, almost reluctantly it seemed, ceased their firing. And once again, the silence of the night settled in around them. They sat there in the quiet a long time, clinging to each other as they gazed out at the twisting yellow glow that was the fire's funeral pyre. Slowly, as the hangar bay fire burned itself out, Luke felt Mara's pain similarly fade away. But to his surprise, it was not a hopeless bitterness or even simple weariness that rose within her to fill the space left by the pain. She had mourned her loss and spent her grief, and now, as it would always be with her, it was time to put feelings and emotions aside and focus again on the task that needed to be done. And indeed, a minute later, she stirred in his arms.
"We'd better go,"
she said, her voice slightly ragged with the after effects of her crying, but otherwise calm and clear.
"They're going to be fighting that fire for a while. This is probably our best chance to sneak back in." "From the size of that blast, I figure we ought to have knocked out everything in the hangar,"
Mara commented as they made their way back down the cliff toward their ship.
"At least as far as flyability is concerned. There may be something way in the back they'll be able to salvage, but it's going to be a job to even get it out."
She was babbling, she knew, her words tumbling out every which way in the aftermath of the exhausting emotional hammering she'd just gone through. She'd never much liked babblers herself, and the thought that she'd become one, even on a temporary basis, rather annoyed her. But oddly enough, it didn't actually embarrass her. That part wasn't a mystery either. If dumping everything on Luke the way she had up there hadn't totally ruined his opinion of her, a little babbling wasn't likely to do it either. And it hadn't destroyed that opinion. That was probably the most surprising part of it all. It truly and genuinely hadn't. Picking her way down the cliff, she could still feel the same warmth and acceptance flowing from him that he'd wrapped so tightly around her up there. There was also, to be sure, a bit more concern and overprotectiveness in the mix than she really felt comfortable with. But that was okay. That was just Luke. And it certainly wasn't anything she couldn't handle.
"I still don't know how we're going to do this," Luke said,
stumbling briefly on a patch of loose rock behind her before he caught himself.
"It'll take way too long to go in through the cave again."
"I know," Mara agreed. "Park mentioned there were gaps in the wall. I guess we'll have to go cross-country and then somehow climb up the side to one of them."
"That's going to be tricky," Luke warned. "They're not going to be nearly as kindly disposed toward us as they were before."
Mara snorted.
"That's okay," she said grimly. "I'm not exactly all that kindly disposed toward them, either."
Ahead and below now, barely visible in the faint starlight, she could see their borrowed ship, just beyond one last narrow fissure in the rock. Gathering herself, she leaped across the gap to a flat-topped boulder, and abruptly halted.
flailing for balance on the rock as shock froze her muscles. Suddenly, unexpectedly, a strange thought or sound had flashed into her mind.
Jedi Skywalker! Ah! Are